Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN.
Whether you're ready or not, here we come.
Yep, I hear there's a parrot in the mix, but we're not sure if we're going to meet him or not.
What's the parrot's name? Ahsen Conyer.
His
Sorry.
name is Mango.
Oh, that's the perfect name.
He looks like a mango.
That's super cute. Our bird's name is Bird.
Isn't your snake's name Snake, too?
No, he finally got a name.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I have a bird and a snake at my house, you guys. It just boggles my mind. Well, okay, now that we've learned about Mango, who are you?
I'm Sheila Clemenson, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today. I am a career coach. That is my one hat that I wear, but I'm also a published author and speaker. I am a widow. It's been quite some time, but you don't ever stop being a widow, even when you get married to somebody else and you build a new life. You bring your loved one forward with you. And 20 years later, I wrote my book, Over the Rainbow, From the Depths of Grief to Hope, because I needed to write a book. It was a calling. As my current husband says, Sheila, not everyone needs to write a book. You need to write a book. Good luck finding time with that. And so I did, and it really is just my journey as a caregiver for my husband Grant, who had ALS. He was diagnosed when he was 32, I was 26. I'm 55 now. We had just got engaged, we bought a house, and we were planning a wedding. And he was diagnosed. And so the rug was pulled out from under us. We were like living in our dream world of he was in international sales. I was working my dream job in HR. And, we just had to really look at, life is what happens when you're making other plans, right? So that reality was harsh. Grant asked me, he said, I want you to know what you're getting into. At first, it was an MS, ALS diagnosis, working diagnosis that, they have to see the symptoms progress before they can diagnose you
Yeah.
fully with that disease.
What year was this? Just so we have an idea, because our knowledge of ALS and MS has improved over the years a little bit, maybe, but I'm just wondering what year
This
he was
was
diagnosed.
1995. It was a long time ago. Honestly, they don't know much more about it.
Yeah. They have better drugs for MS now, but ALS is still just like, ah,
Yeah.
things went wrong.
So, yeah, I mean, we were devastated, clearly. And I decided to marry him anyway because I've been waiting for him my whole life. I traveled around the world with him. He was in international sales. We did a long distance relationship for a while, and just I knew that I wanted this man in my life. So, how do you wrap your head around going newly into a marriage? I married him while I knew he was sick. How do you go into that knowing you're going to lose somebody and the anticipatory grief? And clearly, I had signed up to be his caregiver as well, which I don't care what you think intellectually, you will never know what that's like until you start taking that on. And I was there with him through over 4 years until the day that he died in Kauai, Hawaii. We took an early retirement there his last 2 years. And that is an amazing story. It's a beautiful love story. It's bittersweet. Kauai is a setting. My gosh, to be in a beautiful place when you're experiencing one of the worst things in your life. And so my book really is like, I bring Hawaii and Kauai into my book. I talk about grief waves. I talk about Hawaiian culture and how that supported us through this process, but also how it supported me through my grief and through my healing process for the next 4 years after he died. And I truly believe there are some places in this world that are not, they're in this world, but not of this world. And Kauai is one of them.
I was just going to ask you if it's Kauai because my husband, who's dead, Scott, that's where we went on our honeymoon. And
Who's
he,
dead?
I'm sorry. Well, I guess I don't have a current one,
You have to clarify the dead husband over the one that's living.
so, and he would say the same thing that there is something special about Kauai. And don't the Native Islanders say that as well? Like, there's a spirit of
Yes.
the
And they
island.
call it a lot of different things. There's mana, which is the spirit of the island. There's aina, which is the spirit of the land. It's what I, it's just, it's an incredibly special place, whether you've just touched down there one time or you've lived there. There is something very special about it. And I was lucky to spend the first day on the island that I was there. Was actually a separate trip that Grant took me there, my first husband, and he proposed to me on Secret Beach, my first day and my first time on the island. So Secret Beach was a very special place, and it's known as Secret Beach, but it's called Kaupeia, and so they all have Hawaiian names. But we had visited and got married there before we lived there. And then Grant phased out professionally and we moved out there. We moved there in 97, 1997. It was 5 years, 6 years. Wait a second. 92 was Hurricane Iniki, 5 years after Hurricane Iniki, which was a Category 5 hurricane that devastated the island. So we were able to move there when they were still rebuilding. We rented a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home for $500 a month. I mean, like, you couldn't do that in this day and age now, but back then it was incredibly feasible. In addition, I worked for a friend, seriously making $8 an hour in a clothing store to get our insurance, because back then, if you worked part-time, they gave you full-time healthcare benefits. I was able to get all of our benefits under Hawaii Blue Cross Blue Shield. So
Wow.
we were embraced and we were just invited in. And from the moment you step on the island, it either embraces you or it rejects you. And that is the personality character of the island.
It
Yeah,
chucks you
Anita.
back into the sea. It's like, no, thank you. We don't want your kind here.
It spits you back onto the mainland or the
Yeah.
sea, depending. Yeah.
Sheila, I think it's such an interesting position to be in that you knew going into this marriage that you were going to A, have to take care of Grant. And like you said, you probably thought you understood what that meant, but you were probably incredibly wrong. And B, that you were going into a marriage where you basically knew that he was not going to live for a super long time. That's such a like How do you do that and get through it?
Well, love and stupidity kind of might be a part of that. I mean, I don't want to say blind love because I thought I knew what I was getting into. But at one point, you know, Grant looked at me. This is several years after we had been on this journey together. And he said, "I think that you bit off more than you could chew." And I looked at him and I said, "Yes, I did. But I'm still wiping your butt and I'm still here taking care of you." And it was the commitment that I made. Although any given day I could have run off to Mahalona Psych Hospital, you know, because I just really had bit off more than I could chew.
Yeah.
Honestly.
How was it that you left your support system that I assume that you had where you lived before? Was that something that you ever thought, well, maybe that was a bad idea to leave the other people who could support us? Or were they just jerks anyway and were no help?
No.
Hawaii was better.
They were amazing people. Like, I was living in Northern Michigan at the time. I'm from the Detroit area. We were from Flint and Detroit, respectively, Novi area. I lived in Charlevoix-Petoskey. That's up in the Northern Lower, off Lake Michigan. It's beautiful 4 months out of the year. The other eight, it's really miserable and cold. So I had a husband who was like, "I don't want to be a trapped house cat." He was used to traveling all over the world. And he's like, there was a part of him, he did not want people to see him progressing in the disease and becoming the shell of a human that he once was. So there was something about Grant wanting to start new someplace else where not many people knew him, almost so family and friends could remember him the way that he was, which was an incredibly magnetic and charismatic individual. So clearly I was concerned about not having the support system, but we did have some friends on the island. Honestly, I probably wasn't thinking too much about that in the beginning because he was still getting around, at least with a cane and a little bit with a wheelchair. But then I started realizing that we were going to have to rely on our community there. And it's an amazing community. And even being two white people on the islands, which we were a minority, we were still embraced. And so I was able to hire caregivers at $10 an hour to come in and help take care of him. These may not have been seasoned caregivers, right? Like, these were people that are like, "Yes, I'll sign up. I can take him to the beach. And maybe I can even roll a joint if he wants to smoke it." Okay. But like, "I can do that. And I can make sure that he's still alive when you get home today."
And you were like, "I'll take it. I'll take whatever. I need a break. I need a rest." Oh my goodness. So when did he die? How long? You said he lived for 4 years.
Grant died in September of 1999.
He didn't make it till the year 2000 when everything was going to explode and Y2K was going to drain your bank account and everything was going to go haywire. Just took a little longer, guys.
He's like, "I don't want to be around for the apocalypse."
He's kind of like, "I'm ready to get out of here." Yeah, no, it was, you know, we were on an island, right? So his last day was very special. And I write about it in the book. We went home with hospice 2 months before he died. He made me promise when we were in the hospital, he had aspiration pneumonia. And this was before we went home with hospice. And he made me promise that I would get him to Secret Beach one last time before he died. He hadn't been really since, you know, several years before. So it's really hard to get to Secret Beach. There is a very steep path that is very wet going down to the bottom. There are no roads down to the beach. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, okay, I'm going to promise him this, but I had no idea how I was going to make good on it. I was getting 3 hours of sleep a night. Well, my friend Anna Christina from Norway, who she's rooted in Kauai, and I have a fun story in my book about her. She connected with a ranch hand who had access to five gates and five different property owners who had one road down to the beach. This guy had taken care of a woman who was dying of cancer, who died of cancer, and he knew how important it was to try to make good on this last wish. So he was the one who opened this cattle ranch road down to the beach for us. and he made Secret Beach Day happen. It ended up being Grant's last day.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's all in the book.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a magical day, and it was very special. And we did a ceremony, and it was just one of those things you pinch yourself, but the community that we were able to bring together to support both of us was amazing. And I want to say that the island just embraced us. And it might not for everybody. We were fortunate. And I do think we were fortunate doing it after Hurricane Iniki, because people were much more concerned about taking care of everybody on the island. And they had no fatalities. So like everyone took care of one another on the island after that devastating tragedy hit. So yeah, I hope that that just paints a picture for you. It was easy for us to get the support that we needed. And I want to say kind of otherworldly, not really. We had a lot of help. I believe in angels. I believe in some version of God, whatever we want to call it, creator, great spirit, God, you know. I felt we were embraced and totally held where we needed to be. And so, yeah.
I'm a little disappointed that you did not carry him on your back down the path, because I think that would have been a great visual. But I'm happy you got there, no matter how you got there.
If I drove the wheelchair down, that would have been terrifying.
You could have gotten him down easy. He just, it would have been kind of
okay,
a mess.
But the sand.
At the bottom.
Wouldn't the sand have been
They have
a big
sand
problem?
Wheelchairs.
They do. They do. And I want to say, I hope they're a lot better than they were back then.
Probably not.
Leave it to Anita to bring some levity
yes.
to the job, Anita.
And you know what?
That was good. Sorry.
He probably would have preferred for me to take him on his back. But, you know, I was carrying him around for so long from a psychological, intellectual, and spiritual place. I was really kind of done with that by that point. Really, like, I wasn't going to kill him, but he may have been threatened a couple of times. And even in the face of our caregivers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you say he was diagnosed when you were 26?
Yes.
And so were you 30 when he died?
Yeah.
So by the time you were 30.
I was 31. Yeah, I was 31.
So by the time you're 31, you're already a caregiver that had seen your husband through an illness. He died. And where do you go from there? Because people sometimes, even at that age, are not even used to others who have been divorced. Not that divorce and widowhood is the same, but it's a big life change. How did you navigate that? That's like, you have 116 years of life experience by that point.
Dysfunctionally, really, truly. I mean, I'm very honest. My book is filled with dysfunctional ways of trying to work through grief, including drinking a lot of alcohol and sleeping with a lot of men and having inappropriate relationships. Yeah.
I'm really glad to talk about this, because these are the things people experience and they don't want to talk about. So first of all, on behalf of those who have had a similar experience and feel maybe some shame, thank you for speaking to your experience and tell us everything.
Yeah. You know, when you're taking care of somebody with ALS and they can't move, and, you know, I mean, we had an intimate relationship. We could still have sex, but it was more of an intimate kind of a sex, right? It just was very different, right? And you're caring for that person. And so it's an intimacy, but there is definitely a lot of really significant changes happening in your relationship sexually. And so I felt disconnected from him in some ways, but also, you know, it was all about his needs 24/7. And he started becoming, over time, you know, more like my child than like my spouse, right? Because I was doing everything for him. The progression of the disease, right? You can no longer eat. You can no longer breathe. You can't move your arms and your legs. You can't talk very well. So I, you know, basically was his interpreter. I was helping him eat. I basically didn't have a life of my own at the end. So After Grant died, I really experienced great relief. It was great relief for him that he was out of this body that wasn't working for him anymore, and for myself that I no longer had to be responsible for keeping him alive and taking care of him, right? It was incredibly stressful. I loved him. I didn't want to lose him, but I knew both of us weren't getting out of there alive, right? And at times I questioned whether I was going to live through it as well, because I looked like I'd aged years going through those 4.5 years. After Grant died, you know, it was just very much the lightness that I felt. Yes, I kind of had my own life back, even though I didn't know what that looked like. And physical touch is my love language. I was craving intimacy. I was craving being physically embraced and just loved and just, you know, held and just all of those things that like we miss. I was just really needing all of that, right? And so in terms of connecting with men and going out and drinking, bringing men home from the bar, I mean, like only in Kauai could I do that without being killed, murdered, and raped, okay? Because it was a protected island and I had people looking out for me all over the place, right? I could have never gotten away with what I did on the island someplace else. And, you know, sometimes it was people who were on vacation. Sometimes it was friends of friends. Sometimes they, you know, and I say it, and, you know, my husband knows about it too. And it's written in the book, you know, you're just wanting what you haven't had in a really long time. And so I was very needy. I was like, you know, not afraid to express that. I was self-medicating with alcohol, some prescription drugs, some pot, whatever, right? And, you know, I was living a very functional life, though. Like, I had a job, I was making money, I bought a house, I had a retreat business. Like, I wasn't like a drunk lush, not doing anything, but I was using alcohol to numb. And I was a party girl. And so, like I say, I still dance on tables. I just don't take my clothes off anymore. Like, that's the kind of party girl that I was. A lot of fun until I wasn't.
Now you got to be worried about falling off the table and, you know, breaking a wrist or something. So just be careful. Do
yeah,
your, you know,
right?
take, drink your milk, have your vitamin
yeah,
D.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm 18 years sober now. Like, I realized that I had a drinking problem over time. And, you know, actually, you know, it didn't take that long when I'm blacking out and I'm like out on a date with somebody, right? Like, that's not normal. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you, when you were in that time period, did you have any sort of feeling of, this isn't actually what I want to be doing? Or were you just non-judgmental of yourself in that time period?
I think that I was really looking for a relationship. I was really looking for another partner. I was probably living in a bit more codependent kind of a place, maybe a more emotionally needy as well. Yes, I had great friends in Ohana on the island, and they were amazing. But there was something about that relationship and that need for a relationship that I probably didn't need one, but I thought I did.
So how did you break out of that pattern? And I mean, you mentioned that you have an alive husband. So when did that happen? And did you need to break out of that pattern before that could happen?
Yeah, I did. Personally, it was 7 years of insane dating stories, which I include some of them in the book.
Wow.
Did you do anything like a support group like AA or anything community-based like that?
So I did AA just for a short period of time, and I pretty much managed it all on my own. I believe there are a lot of different kinds of alcoholics, and I was just the party girl alcoholic, and I'm not physiologically as dependent on alcohol as other people might be. It's for me more of a social escape and more of that kind of an experience. For me, like for 7 years, like I was like really learning what not to do, who not to go out with. My husband cried, like, in bed, like before he died, he would cry and he would just say, "I'm not going to be here to protect you anymore. You're going to be dating all of those jerks like you used to." And he was absolutely right. I
Proven
was
right.
dating all the jerks, all the emotionally unavailable guys, nobody who is a bad person, just people who, didn't really want to have a committed relationship. And so I would, want somebody to be that person. And I describe them in the book by their professions, probably because I'm a career coach. So like I call them like certain names. Only one of them has a name. And yeah, his name's Phil.
Filth. That's a good one. Tell me what your thoughts are on this. There's like in our conscious mind, we're like, well, I want someone to be with, to touch, to take care of me. I can take care of him. I mean, not in the caretaker role, right? Especially like after being a caretaker, but you want a partner. And this is really common that people who have sustained severe trauma and things like, like you have and we have, it's almost like we don't see the things for what they are in people. And I know that I've fallen into that trap, in the codependency trap, a lot in my life. And it's like as we grow, then we can look back and say, oh, there were signs. But do you think that part of you maybe didn't want anything that would be fully committed?
Absolutely. I said I wasn't going to get married again, but yet I wanted to. I mean,
Yeah.
it was really dysfunctional. I mean, it was incredibly dysfunctional. I had to work through all of that.
Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone, But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone, But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor. How was that for you with self-judgment? Because I know for me, I'm like, oh, I know better now, but I didn't then. And I kind of sometimes would find myself hating my previous self, but I didn't know any better. We're all learning and
Yeah.
growing.
The judgment was really like, why am I doing this again? And how many people has this been? And what am I not getting? Clearly, I was not getting so much until one day, I guess a really friends with benefits kind of a connection with an upstairs neighbor, younger guy, super cute. And I'm just like, well, I don't need anything serious. I can just have fun. He was probably 29. I was 35, whatever, right? Well, I started really realizing that it would really bother me when he didn't call anymore, like if I didn't hear from him for days or whatever. And I was really, really getting upset. And I sat there finally, and it was like somebody seriously bitch slapped me. And I just said, I am worried that this person, I am concerned this person isn't calling me. I can make a commitment to marry somebody who has a terminal illness and be there with them through all of that until the day that they die. And I'm going to worry that this jerk cannot call me and connect with me. Like, what am I doing? Like it finally was the realization of the quality of person that I really, the quality of the relationship. I won't say the person, the quality of the relationship that I wanted to bring in. And at that point, I was still drinking. I had a really bad experience, seriously, with a guy who was a drug dealer before I gave up drinking. And this is the kind of person who is a middle person whose friends have homes in Aspen, kind of a drug dealer. Okay. I had to go through 2 months of that to finally wake up and say, if I do not stop drinking and get my life together, I am going to kill myself or somebody else. Because I would get in a car and I'd drive when I was drinking. I never got a DUI. I never got arrested, but it was, the writing was on the wall. And so I went into AA the next day. I realized I wrote down everything that happened the night before. That's in the book. And it was insane. It was really insane. Like somebody could have gotten killed. It was that insane. And I had to really take stock of my life. So over that next year, that was 2005, over that next year, I cleaned myself up. I got my act together and I started setting intention for my next beloved. That was the full buffet, the dessert, the dinner, the drinks, the appetizers, everything. And Sean Clemenson showed up in my life a month after I set intention on Secret Beach in October of 2006, I was invited to a housewarming party by my Kauai friend who moved to Louisville, Colorado. And he invited the divorced firefighter from down the street to the party. And I asked him, well, tell me about the divorced firefighter. And he said, I don't know anything about him. I just invited him. Sean shows up at the party and he decides, oh, I'm going to bring the fire truck for the kids and like put my uniform on and look all cute. And I've been with him ever since. And that was 18 years ago.
You can just take the fire truck? I feel like
that's cool.
That's against the
I
rules.
Asked him if I could drive it, but he said yes, but he's never let me do that, which he wouldn't, of course. No.
Then I will argue he's not the full buffet because that was promised to you and you need to get that out of him.
Well, yeah, I gotta say, in defense, he was the assistant division chief at the time. He would have been.
Yes. No.
So how was that for him dating a widow and for you having to explain your whole situation? That's hard. That's what we're all scared of.
Yeah, Sean rose to the occasion. He's a badass. He's a former military, Navy guy, firefighter, EMT for over 20 years. He shows up when people are dying. There is something about people who hold that other space for people that is pretty powerful, right? But he's very much a he-man and he's completely opposite from me. I say he's the anchor that grounds the kite. I'm up here and he's down here. And he's so different from me and logical, and I'm emotional and he's logical and he's analytical and I make decisions by my feelings and whatever. But I have to say, immediately from day one, he held the space for Grant. And he just was not jealous of him. He just held the space for this amazing man who was in my life. And he has held that space ever since. In the book, I talk about mystical experiences of Grant. Grant has visited me in dreams. I've had strange things happen, and I talk about all of them since he's died, even till today. And Sean knew some of them, but he didn't know all of them until he read the book. And I want to share, this is just so touching, but I was really terrified about Sean reading the book because I decided to go really raw and vulnerable in here because you can't talk about grief without doing that. And although he knew most of his stories, he didn't know everything. Well, I told him, I said, you don't need to tell me what you think about my book at all. I just want you to know what's in it because you're in it. You're about the rebuilding process. You're about how I moved forward in my life and brought you with me and my two stepdaughters who were 10 and 12 at the time, and they're now 28 and 30. That was a nightmare. I'd never dated a guy with two kids like that. So I just say that he read the book and he was really afraid. And I said, when are you going to read the book? And he's like, I don't have to edit it, do I? And then he goes, I want to read it when it's fully edited before it's printed. And this was an hour before, I'm sorry, a year before it was ready. So I finally told him, I said, the book's ready for you to read. And he looked really scared. He said, I'm not reading this book until I'm on my business trip next week. And I'm in the van all by myself, the camper van. So he read it. I got a text message this long the next morning. He said, I was up till 1 o'clock in the morning reading your book. Oh my God, I did not know that you writing a book could make me love you more. He's like, I'm blown away at everything that you put in this book. And who are you? Who are you to be married to me? I can't believe you're my wife. And like, he just went on and on. Like, he had known these stories, but he said that when he read them in the version and the way that I shared all of them, he said it just blew him away. And I was really worried about what I'd written about him, right? And he said, well, you weren't really woo-woo in this book. And I said, I know, I told you I was doing this. And he goes, okay. He goes, it's all good. He goes, I didn't know that you were going all those places. It's like, okay. And then he said, I only have two things I want you to change. And I'm like, okay, I was expecting a heck of a lot more than that. He said, first of all, only two people died in the Marshall Fire because we had a Marshall Fire here in Louisville, Superior. I said three people. It was really only two. And then he said, oh, when the Estes Park Fire was happening, the day we got married, and you said approximately, it was approximately 4 miles from our wedding location. It was 3 miles as the crow flies. And I was like, okay. I noticed they're both related to fires, and he's a fire.
And
Yes.
they're very like very fact-based and
Yes.
measurable quantities. No woo-woo there. That was like,
Yeah.
how dare you say
Yes.
three people when it
Yeah.
was only
Yeah.
two?
And it was only two. So I have to say that, Sean has held space for Grant's ghost in the most beautiful way. I had all of Grant's belongings in a box one day and I was going through them. And Sean says to me, I said, honey, what do I do with all of this? He goes, that's your box. You keep all of your memories that you want to keep and whatever you want to do with them. And I respect you and what you need. Right. And I was just like, oh. But like, I found somebody who could live with his story, who has met our friends that we had together and held space with that, and who has been just very gracious about who I've become as a person because of my experience with him. I think that's probably what I would say most. Yeah.
So I'm confused about this is this is a firefighter question, but not really. So were you still in Hawaii and you got invited to a party in Colorado, or why did you leave Hawaii?
I left Hawaii because I dated all the single, responsible, and irresponsible
Oh,
on
okay.
the island. It was time to leave. The island got really quiet. It was like it kind of kicked me off, and not in a brutal way. It was time for me to leave and go do some work on the mainland. So I reintegrated through Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I helped my mom build a Visiting Angels home care for senior business in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She needed a right arm. I had HR, marketing, caregiving background. I was a hospice volunteer. I went in and I helped her build her business the first year that she had it. And then I found my way up to Denver taking coaches training classes. I fell in love with my friend's brother, Phil, and then I built my own life on my own. Stumbling around in the dark looking for the light switch in my underwear and not finding both.
You left the island with the beaches and the sand, and you went to the
Yeah,
snow
it
and
was
the
awful.
elevation. Did you ski though?
Yeah, I started learning to ski. Sean taught me how to ski. It wasn't, I didn't leave the island because I wanted to leave my friends and the island. But living there is very different from vacationing and visiting there. It is an extremely expensive place to live. A lot of people there work three jobs to try to make ends meet. If you go there already with money, great. But you're not going to get rich living on an island. I mean, I did buy a house. I did make some money that way selling it, but you don't have a lot of options in the dating pool also. I'm not saying you can't find quality people out there. Just they want a different life sometimes from where I was at that age, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and that was what I was wondering when we were talking about how you've had so much life
Yeah.
experience, or had by the time you were 31. And also, so Grant died, was this 25 years ago?
Yes, it's 25 years in September.
I have a question for you that I know a lot of our listeners will want to know as well, because we want the grief to leave. We want the hard things to leave. And, you know, over time, some of it can dissipate. But can you tell us about that? I'm about to be 7 years out in this coming November. Anita, are you five? Just over five? So we're, even though now I'm like, I never thought I would say I was almost 7 years out from being a widow. That seems so long. I remember, and it was 7 days, and I thought I had, you know, my life was over. It's still hard in different ways. Will you tell us about what it's like for you now at 25 years with where you're at?
It's still hard to believe it's that long. Just, I'll say that flat out. When I think, oh my gosh, Grant's been gone 25 years this year, it's hard to believe that. I miss him. He was my best friend, and he's now my best friend on the other side. He was so funny. He could have written for Seinfeld or Saturday Night Live. Like, he had a witty, crazy sense of humor and made me laugh so hard. And I still miss that about him so much, because the relationship that we have with our beloved is whatever we had with them. So one of my friends described it a little bit like this, you know, let's say, Sheila, you have 200 holes in your heart and Grant fills 150 of them. And you go and you meet somebody else and they fill 175, but they're not all the same. Or they fill 125 and they're not all the same, right? And so it is much like that. It's moving forward, finding new life, finding new purpose. And that's what I do as a career coach and a transitions coach, helping people move forward. And I have, in a business, helped people move forward as widows, moving forward through grief. Not as a therapist, but more in that forward movement. A lot of professional, career, meaningful, purposeful kinds of work that I would do. But also, bringing that forward and recognizing that you will always have a relationship with them forever if you believe that. It's, where do you put them in your life as you move forward? What place do they take in your life? Can you share your memories with your other loved ones about them? And is that safe? And is that okay? And I have created that and found that. I'm still really great friends with his best friend, and we talk all the time. We can share things that I can't share with Sean, right? You know, I have his urn, and I've got a little picture of him on like the top of my shelf over here, and he's with my dog in an urn of my dog and my grandparents, and it's kind of like my little deceased area up on the top, right? But you know, it's kind of like you want to keep them alive, and you want to know how you can do that respectfully moving forward with other people in your life. And then, you know, sometimes you're lucky and you find somebody, and it's okay for you to share stories. It's okay for you to say, you know, today would have been mine and Grant's 20th wedding anniversary, or today would have been this. And for someone to just say, oh, okay. I know not everyone can hold space for that. I have former clients of mine who've lost people, and their new partners could not hold space with that. So I want to say that not everyone can find a partner who is so gracious about doing that. While at the same time, I'm not talking about him all the time, right? Like, not every story is about him. Not everything is about him. Maybe it was 5 years. You know, and I wanted everyone to know I was a grieving widow too. I wanted everybody to know my story, and I was all about my story until I took the coach's training class. And in one of our coach's training sessions, we were practicing on each other. And this one person said to me, Sheila, when are you going to be more than your story or bigger than your story? And I felt like I was gut punched because I was my story. But this piggybacks into Brené Brown, you know, what Brené says about owning your own story, to move forward in your story and to create the ending that you want. And that's kind of what I've embraced and moved forward with. And my book represents showing people that it is possible, even if you're not feeling good, and that you can do that, as painful and difficult as it is.
I think it's so interesting listening to this, because Mel asked you, you know, basically when we're fresh in grief, it's like, how long is this going to last? And you wrote a book 20 some odd years out. So it means that it was still present enough for you to put the effort into writing a book, which writing a book is not easy. It's, you know, I think a lot of people kind of flippantly say, well, I'm going to write a book. People told me to write a book. I'm going to write a book and think it's going to be a really quick process. And it's not a really quick process, a lot of work. So it had to have been enough present in your mind that you would still want to share that. And I think at the same time, though, it's hopeful sounding that you weren't destroyed either by it 25 years in the future. It was a part of your story. It was a part of your life, but it didn't destroy you for the rest of forever.
Yeah. I want to say 7 years was pretty key. And I know that sounds, that's a long time. And I don't want to say it's devastating grief that whole time, right? I want to say the first couple of years, you're stumbling around in the dark and you're numb and you don't even know who you are and whatever, you know, you're going through. But I want to say that it 5 to 7 years, you know, you're kind of at this place where it still hurts, but you have found some really great things in your life that you have connected with, that you're moving forward with. It doesn't mean that you can't get hit by a wave and knocked down and cry your eyeballs out, because you will. But I've noticed those rogue waves just become fewer and farther in between. They don't hit as often. But I did have one hit me writing this book that I did not think that I was going to ever have hit me again. And I won't share it because it's towards the end and it's a really great story. But I never thought, I didn't think that a rogue wave could hit me this far out in the future. And it did. And it didn't last that long, but it still did. And so I just want to say fewer and farther between. And it also depends on where you are in your life, how grounded you are as an individual, maybe how secure you are in yourself, as well as the support systems and networks and all of the people that you have in your life. And whether you're really living into that life that you really want to live into, the one that you ventured to dream about even a little bit, dipping your toe in after your husband died. It's kind of about finding new dreams, new opportunities, new things to get excited about, and to know that it doesn't mean that you don't miss that person and that you don't wish that they were still here. It just changes, right? So I can even ask and say, oh my gosh, you know, Grant died 25 years ago. I look at friends that we had at that time who are divorced now and different things like that. And I go, will we still have been married? Like 25 years later, like, would we still be together? Like, what would that have looked like? And so sometimes there is that what if, right? And sometimes there is that what if. There's an exercise that I'm putting into my journal that's not completely done. There's 3 chapters that are available online on my website. But I want to do a what if they were still alive? What if? And you can be dreamy about that. And what if, what would have happened if in these situations, and create your own story about it, because we're always creating our own stories. You may as well tell a story that you would like to visit, even though it's not true and it hasn't happened in this particular lifetime, right? I used to always make Grant promise me, I'm like, promise me in another life, we're going to come back together and we're going to grow old together. And we're going to be swinging on that swing with all our grandkids running around and we're going to be old together in that life, right? I know, right? And he like, okay, I promise, you know, but I'm also somebody who doesn't necessarily, who actually might believe that we come here more than one time and that we can love more than one person and that we can have a lot of really different experiences, but this is the one that we had for whatever reason in this particular life. And we only have one life as far as we know this time, at least, and we just need to make the most of it. But sometimes it takes a while to get there, right? Sometimes it takes a while to get there. And like I said, you know, kicking and screaming, drunk, dancing on a table. I mean, like,
I love that though. I love that you have embraced all of it. And I don't love the things that have happened to you, but all of the things that you have experienced have made you who you are. So we really appreciate you sharing your story. And I'm curious for our listeners and for us, where can we find your book? Tell us again the name.
So the name is Over the Rainbow, From the Depths of Grief to Hope. It is available on Amazon. I also send people to SheilaClemonson.com, where they can get a lot of different information about the book and the journal. They can download the first three chapters. And the journal is really, it's to work through your feelings and to work through things. I'm building a 21-day Rebuilding Your Life program that's really tapped into self-care and taking care of yourself. And then moving, you know, taking some baby steps to move forward when you're ready. That's in process. Transitionscoachingservices.com is my other website where I have the book that pops up and you can tap in to buy it as well. So that's where you can get it is on Amazon, which is great. And, you know, in terms of offering, I offer complimentary consults, complimentary sessions, 30 to 45 minutes that people can sign up on my schedule on my transitions coaching site. And it doesn't have to just be career. It can be kind of wherever you're at. So I just set that out there.
Thank you, Sheila. We have to end with a very important question that is more important than any of the questions that we've talked about. And it is this. Are you ready? What is your favorite cheese?
Oh my God. Okay. I'm really into eating Gruyere on a grilled cheese sandwich with basil tomato soup.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. Good selection.
Very classic.
So I kind of had to just share the whole thing.
That's fine. We accept the platter. The platter. Plating of the cheese and what it will be paired with. So thank you so much for joining us today, Sheila. You are delightful. And we hope all of our listeners have enjoyed hearing a little bit about your story. Go check out her book. And if you guys want to keep the podcast going, will you check out our Patreon? It's patreon.com/WWDN.
If you'd like to buy us tacos, go to buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow.
And if you don't want to do that, give us a nice rating interview on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And until we get to talk to you again, I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
And I'm Sheila Clemonson.
And we are just two young widows and one widow who still dances on the table, but with her clothes on now. And we're all just trying to figure out widow.
We
do
now. This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks, and so you don't have to pay extra for that, and you still get great service.
Yep, Anita and I have traveled all over and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.